This is a podcast from Minute Media.
Welcome to Jab Cross Hook, a fan-sided fight show with your hosts, Ian McMillan, Amy Kaplan, and Reed Wallach.
Hello, everyone. It is Jab Cross Hook, myself, Amy Kaplan, Reed Wallach. We've got a jam-packed show today. Obviously, we're going to finish off with the bet draft for UFC 275. We also have an interview today, a little bit of a unique one. We're not talking to a fighter today. We're talking to Jay Petry for Sure Dog. He's going to talk to us about a fight that we touched on last week, Askar Mozgharov, who had a cooked record. We're going to get that, get some details about that. Jay wrote a fantastic article about it on Sure Dog, but I have some more questions for him. I'm sure Amy and Reed do as well. But we are obviously going to start with just a little chit-chat, a little what's going on in the UFC world, a little update from past weekend, but we will start the show, as always, with what are we drinking? Reed, I will start with you. What have you snagged from your community beer fridge?
Yeah, I've decided, first of all, what's up, guys? I've decided no more Bodega Man to give me, like, random beer options. It's not going well with my drafting. It's not going well with my UFC betting. We are sticking with beer in the fridge. This is what happens when you're a 25-year-old and live with two guys. There's always beer in the fridge. So we're sticking nice, cheap Bud Light. Keep it simple. Get nice and loose. Got a finals game later. Let's just keep it flowing. Let's get back on track.
Amy, I know that you are obviously training. We talked about this last week. So are you drinking this week, or at least drinking some, I don't know, Gatorade or something? What do you got?
It looks like Gatorade, but it's just water with some energy fizz. I've been feeling, oh my gosh, this week has kicked my butt. Like, it's bad. Like, it's crazy, crazy hard. So I'm just going with water and some energy fizz, try to boost me up because I took a nap before this. Low energy. We'll see how the rest of the show goes.
What week are you in the training? Is it week three?
Week three.
Makes sense. So from my experience of being in really good shape and exercising and then stopping for 2 years and then getting back on it, I find like the third and fourth weeks are the toughest weeks. And then your body starts to get used to it a little bit after that. So still sticking to it so far, though, 3 weeks in.
Yep. Still sticking to it.
How many weeks is it total?
20.
Okay. Yeah. I feel like once you get over that first hump of 3-4 weeks and then you know, you adapt, like Ian said.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we're obviously increasing what we're doing things a little bit harder. There's been a lot more throwing up of people so far. Still no throwing up for me, thankfully.
Oh, nice.
But yeah, it's
that's a win right there.
Yeah. It's getting there. So people are already injured. We have a girl who may have a broken foot already. I've got bruises everywhere. So, you know, fun times.
Have you decided on a fight name yet? Are you going to go with the one brought up last week, which I think was Killshot Kaplan? Is that what we're going with?
I think I am. Yeah, I think I am. I love it. Yeah.
Now,
although it didn't go well for me last week with my kill shots on the betting draft. So I don't know. We'll see.
Speaking of betting draft, who won last week?
I don't know. Let's just move on.
Yeah, we don't need to recap last week's from like the betting draft perspective.
I'd like to find out who won.
Who won? Why don't you let us know?
Well, maybe my drink of choice, because I have been not drinking for probably 10 days, but I mean, I'm not going to break tradition. I won the bet draft, so.
Victory bubbly this time.
I had victory wine before. I thought it'd make a little bit more sense if it was victory bubbly, a little Prosecco. I've learned living in fancy New York that it's only champagne if it comes from champagne part of France. So
fancy.
What did wine taste very delicious.
What did you do last? Did you sweep the board or did you just go 2-1?
I went, do we have a recap graphic? I don't remember if we have a recap graphic for this or not. I think we do.
Yeah.
We do have a recap graphic. Look at that. Of course, our awesome production team has that. I went 2-1. Plus 0.57 units. I did lose Rosenstruik, and we're going to talk about that here in a moment, about that stoppage. Won on Carolina, who was a plus 100 underdog. My strategy of betting the fighter who won the first fight in a rematch worked for me this time. And then Minifield, which is obviously the guy who fought the guy with a cooked record that we're going to talk about a little bit later with our guest. So I went 2-1, and I was lucky because that Minifield bet – We placed when he was still only minus 175. Yeah. Saturday morning, he was all the way up to minus 250 because the news kind of broke about his opponent's cooked record. So I did win with the 2-1 record. You two went 1-2, the each of you, I believe. Amy, when that underdog big underdog strategy works, it's a beautiful thing. Unfortunately, it doesn't always. Didn't Argetta only lose by, was it split decision or just a close fight or something, I think?
It was decision, yeah. I didn't get a chance to see it, so I'm not sure if it was close. But
yeah, Connolly was kind of like on top of him the whole fight. But then the third round got very close. He definitely, it was like a clear 30-27, but like round three got a little dicey for Connolly. He was like the biggest favorite on the board, so that got a little dicey. But Argetta, I mean, early in the fight, he looked like the underdog he was, you know what I mean?
He also took the fight on 4 days' notice.
100%. No, he actually acquitted himself very well by the end of it. He just couldn't keep Connolly off his back. You know, he was just getting tossed right down to the mat. So up a weight class, I believe, also.
Yeah.
Let's really quick update on a couple of former guests, and then we're going to bring on our current guest. But our guest from last week, Ben Tynan, won via arm triangle choke. LFA, I believe it was, correct?
Yes.
This past week, so... obviously, if you remember, we had a bit of internet issues there near the end, but he is officially a friend of the show. Big win by him. Another first-round finish via arm triangle choke. And then really quick, we do need to, of course, mention Jeff Molina, the first ever guest of Jab Cross Hook, won his fight in the UFC. Arguable decision, possibly?
He got his hand raised, so...
he got his hand raised. It will count as a win on his record. But I did miss the first few fights. Reed, I think you told me that when they said it was a split decision and when they said 30-27, he started walking away thinking there's no way it was him, and then it ended up being him.
Yeah, I watched the fight. I thought it was like a clear Zhumagulov, like, especially, so it was like a split decision, so they're reading it off, and Zhumagulov, I thought, like, could have easily won 30-27, probably like 29-28, but like clear decision victory. So when it goes to split, I go, oh, Molina's so good. It's just like you know that he's going to win. The guy that never deserved to win, it always feels like he wins. And they do a third. They say 30-27 is the last card. And Jeff literally like walks away from like the little stand-up in the middle, walks away, and they're like, the winner by split decision, Jeff Molina. He turns around and he's like, oh, like that's crazy. Like he had no idea. So I don't think he deserved it at all, but I think he's kind of eating that also. Like you see on social media, he's playing around with it. So, yeah, it is. It is what it is.
He went kind of semi-viral as well for a clip. Was it like defending like the Pride Month colors of shorts or a shirt or something?
He had posted originally that he was really happy and proud to be able to wear the Pride colors for Pride Month when he got his fight kit, and he was completely blasted for it. People were asking if he was gay. I mean, they were just really going in on him, and he was sort of like, which I really appreciated. He was like, well, like, if I was like, it's, that's not an insult. Like that would be just who I am. And it's just not me. You know, he was not like getting defensive. He was sort of like talking about how weird it is. And he said again in his post fight, kind of talked about that a little bit about how terrible he was being received. And then they were even badly receiving that. So it's just like, it's the kind of nature, unfortunately, that a lot of the MMA community has. But I was really, really proud of the way he handled that. And, yeah, I think that's an ally right there for sure.
Mm. We are double proud of our guest, Jeff Molina, this week. Big win, big moment. Love him. Hopefully we'll have him on the show again sometime soon. And also don't forget he went 3-0 in our bet draft and beat us in terms of betting too. So Jeff Molina, triple winner. Let's get to this week's guest. We're going to bring him on if we can. Jay Petrie, I hope I pronounced his last name correct. Associate editor at SureDog. Welcome to the show. Thank you for coming on, because we got a story that we want to talk to you about that you wrote about. I've said at the top of the show, everyone should go read that article because it's very interesting. I'm surprised this story didn't go even more viral. Obviously, it did in the MMA UFC world, but I thought this is like a big story just in sports in general. So maybe if we can even just start off just by giving a kind of a quick down for people, quick rundown for people who aren't aware what happened. With the fighter on that fought on last week's UFC card.
Sure. Great. I appreciate it. First time caller, long time listener, Ian Reed. Thanks for having me. Amy, I'm really happy to see you again. Hope we run into each other at an event sometime soon. Now that events are happening, I don't know the Boston card is going to happen, but we'll talk about that later. Man, this it was the story. It was a nondescript fight. It was a light heavyweight main card opener, Alonzo Menafield and Askar Mozharov, who was a UFC debutante with, at the time, a record of 25-7, according to the UFC. That was the official one on record. Tapology had the same thing. And on Sherdog, I'm the associate editor of Sherdog, and I work with the staff on Fight Finder. We had 21-8 because there's a few wins that he had on his record we couldn't substantiate. There's no footage, and I'm sure you guys noticed if you're doing research for the draft pick last week, you're looking for footage for this guy, and it's nowhere to be found. You can find a few things on YouTube, a couple clips here and there, a lot of duplicates. Like, you'll find his win, his knockout over Nurzhang Vong, like, six times, but you'll be like, well, where's the other 14 or so? And so what happened here is this gentleman, Askar Mozharov, who, spoiler alert, his final record at the end of the week, as of actually Sunday, is 19-13. Instead of the 25-7 he claimed following his first round knockout loss to Alonzo Menafield. Now, the reason this all came up is not some sort of vendetta or an admin trying to prove something, as he alluded to on Media Day on Fight Week, and rather that he asked Askar Mozharov personally on his own Facebook account of, like, you know, 800 or 1,000 friends or something, not like a 50,000 follower account, like his own Facebook, reached out to one of the Sherdog Fight Finder staff members' private Facebooks, a private Facebook. I don't even have it, and I work with the guy, and demanded, there's a loss on my record, you must remove it. Essentially, I did not lose this fight. And if you look on the article, I actually document this specifically. It's a 2016 fight against a fighter named Fan Rong in an organization called the Legend King Championship. Well, there's the small thing of the pictures and the information that we have already, the fight poster we have of the actual event, and that little tiny thing of the actual fight itself. We have the video of him fighting with the introductions of Fan Rong, and you guys have seen Askar Mozharov. He's a very distinct individual.
Yeah,
neck tats and the thing, the Ukrainian Conor McGregor style, which, you know, Conor McGregor didn't invent that, but, you know, he's a very distinct gentleman. And we started doing some digging to determine his record from there to set the okay. We have an investigation going. Let's look into this gentleman and see what we can find here. And as we found out, we realized there are internal notes we have for Sherdog Fight Finder. All the way back to 2017 for this guy, when he legally changed his name from Arthur Shatakov to Askar Mozharov. Now, changing your name, that's fine. Go ahead. We don't have any issue with that, as long as it's documented. But you can perceive a situation, just imagine, for example, this guy changes his name and lets Sherdog know, or somebody lets Sherdog know. And then a gentleman named Askar Mozharov emails another Fight Finder staff member and says, hey, excuse me, my name is Askar. Here's this video of this old fight. This guy, his name is Arthur. My name is Askar. So you can see that we're not the same person. Could you please remove this loss? Because this is some other person. And that transpired to the level that got a few more losses pulled off his record onto an account like Arthur Sadkov, Arthur Shadkov, Artur Shadakov. Now, there's transliteration for Russian languages, the K's, the A's, etc. There's different ways to type names out. So we were able to determine as a staff, this guy is the same person in every fight. Now, he's a very distinct individual. In 2013, he still had the big giant tattoo on his arm that is unmistakable for him, even if he's 170 pounds instead of the Goliath 205 he is now. And the investigation over the course of several, into fight week, determined that his record of 25-7 or 21-8, depending on who you looked at, was actually he only had 19 wins because there was a tournament we found, and we found the entirety of the tournament, but he wasn't there. He never was. It wasn't like a no-show. It wasn't anything weird like that. I mean, gosh, it would be crazy. No, he just wasn't ever part of the tournament to begin with. And all of this transpired and unfolded at live, and it turned a nondescript fight into something truly bizarre. And I, like, I've been working with Fight Finder staff members for quite some time. And it's, even to me, it's shocking to have, what is it? He actually, you know, I made the joke of my own Sherdog stat of the week is six, because Askar Mosarov suffered six losses in the span of fight week to fighting in the UFC about that. But it's truly a bizarre situation. And I don't like to use the F word of fraud, because that's a big word. This is a sport with major, you know, money on the line and all of the things like that. But unfortunately, you know, you got to call a thing what it is. And I want to ask you all something, if you don't mind a quick question. Okay. Do you think the UFC will hang on to this? Because the UFC is fully aware of what happened. That Sherlock has been in open communication with UFC staff. I personally was contacted by an official from the UFC to clue them in on this situation. So they know. They know. They updated his record. We talked about that, Amy, on Twitter. That what is the record going to be? Is it good? What are they going to show on fight? What's Bruce Buffer going to say? And they showed they reflected it the way it is. Do you think that Askar Mosarov will have a place on this roster going forward?
You know, that was actually on our list of questions to ask you.
Okay.
But I have a theory. I think that if he had come in and put on a great performance, then yeah, I think they would have said, oh, we knew all along mm-hmm. that he was good and we saw something or whatever, and they would keep him. But I think after his performance and all of this drama, there's no way they can. I mean, I think if they do, then there's clearly somebody is being blackmailed.
Like a puppet master kind of thing?
Yeah, there's somebody that's doing someone a favor. Someone buried a dead body somewhere. Because otherwise, why? I mean, he didn't put on a good performance. He didn't look good. So why? Yeah, with all that drama, I don't know. What do you guys think?
No, Jay, I mean, I don't know how well-versed you are in the betting space, but I mean, Manyfield, when we did the draft initially, and I did my research, like you said.
Manyfield was about, what, a $150, minus 150 or so?
Yeah. When we did the draft, I think he was around like minus 175 at that point. Like he was starting to pick up steam, yep. And I had done my research on the fight, and I saw, like, who is this guy? Because I don't think that highly of Alonzo Manyfield. So mm-hmm. I was like, okay, maybe I'll go. Mm-hmm. And then I looked into this guy. I was like, I literally have – who is this person? I literally have no idea who this is. So by the time the fight closed, he closed, I think, minus 255.
Yep.
He looked minus 1,000. This was like he was fighting just a really tall guy off the street. He would, I mean, like Amy said, Morozov, he would have acquitted himself well in the octagon and gets knocked out. It happens. Like maybe UFC could spin this, but mm-hmm. I just think you have to take this blemish as, hey, we got conned a little bit. Like it is, like, I know you don't want to throw around the fraudulent world. Like to me, like that's what this guy is.
Of course.
You know?
Yeah.
And I mean, you know, someone at Sherdog, where you guys are like a database. And I mean, I use you guys for years. Mm-hmm. You see all these different types of regional footage and stuff like that.
Definitely.
For a guy to come out of the woodwork and then to get on the main card. I mean, it's a little whoopsie. It happens. You know? There's no other way to do it. I ended up making some money off of Manyfield, so I'm not that pissed about it.
Well, that's kind of my main question, because I ended up drafting Manyfield, Reed, but me and you had the same notes, where I looked at this guy last week, and this is before I even found out that he had a cooked record, mm-hmm. and I was like, well, this guy doesn't seem good. All his wins are against Cairns, you know, the only time he fought in North America at Titan,
Christian Torres. He tapped to one single elbow, by the way.
So I was like, even before I knew about the record thing, I was like, this seems like an easy bet to me. So, like, why and how did he even get signed by the UFC in the first place? There's so many talented, skilled fighters out there that aren't in the UFC. How'd this guy get in?
It must be the tattoo.
It's really actually a remarkable situation because I was in open communication. We have on Sherdog Fight Finder, we have about 45 to 50 at any given time international members of that work on the staff, you know, anywhere from, you know, Tennessee all the way to, you know, Ukraine, and we have all over the world. So we have multi, you know, time and multilingual staff members to investigate this. And one of the staff members informed me that back in like 2017 or 2018, for one of his particular fights, he was winning some fights. The announcer stated that multiple times that he was actually signed by Bellator. Once upon a time. Now he never fought for Bellator, as well we know, and as we also recall, he was signed to PFL last year, wasn't it? He was stepping in for Challenger Series or anyway, he was signed to PFL and he pulled out on fight night, and that all fell through too. So he was also signed to PFL, and then he was picked up by the UFC. when you have that sexy, glossy 25 wins and 23 of them by 100%. Knockout, it just on paper. On paper, it was very sexy. Now, as you recall, I heard you guys were talking about the last week, the Kratos, the last three wins he had, where, you know, the guys he was fighting were not exactly, you know, ultimate hot shots that, you know, that one of them was a sub 500 fighter, one of them was 5-1, and then one of them was the spinning wheel kick that he bumped into his ear, and the guy went, oh, and he fell over. There's another fight on his record that's an 8-second knockout, where he walks the guy down, throws a high kick. The kick is blocked high, okay? That's the first strike. The second strike, he steps in. They were in a ring, not a cage. Steps in with a knee. Guy blocks low, blocks the knee. Oscar goes, punch, punch. The guy's corner throws in the towel. That's it. That's the whole fight. That's the entire. And the guy falls to the ground, and he holds his back, and he's all hurt. Oh,
and what promotion was this with?
This was with IPFC Young Fun Showdown 10, July 28th, 2018, against Nurjong, which is all we have. We only have one name. Yeah. So on paper, you see sub 2-minute knockouts like crazy, because this gentleman, like, look, it's never personal, and I respect the certain skills that he brings to the table. For 2 minutes, this guy is shot out of a cannon. He hits like a truck. Even if the guys go, oh, you got me, and they fall down and it's over. Well, no, that one leg kick sounded pretty darn good and probably hurt a little bit, you know, even if the reaction was obviously exaggerated, that he has power. And so they could see this, and whomever was scouting him saw all of the wins and the quick wins. If you just look at Sherdog, for example, you have to look at their page to see that Fabrice Degand was 5-0 at the time, or Evgeny Kholib was actually, you know, a mid-tier guy. You just see, oh, he smoked that guy. Oh, he destroyed that guy. And so I believe that must have been what drew people to him, because, you know, it's the sweater song, you know, once you pull the thread, his record is very, very naked and not a good kind. It just, like, the first 7 wins he had, 7 in a row, 7 first or 6 first round finishes or something like that. A very impressive get back on track. Well, none of the fighters he beat had ever won a pro fight. So what [S2] Right. [S1] Do? What do you do? You just, okay, that's, I discussed his cherry picking. So it's just that or right place, right time. I don't know, because this was intentional. He's been signed for the UFC for quite some time, if you guys recall. He was supposed to fight Ben Rothwell. He was supposed to fight one other person. I think it was a heavyweight as well. And then he was set up against Menafield. So questions upon questions upon questions.
How do you think that the UFC handled it once, you know, like, I guess in fight week, you know, it sounds like they did contact you. It seems like they were trying to get to the bottom. Yep. Do you think they did enough? Do you think they did their diligence, or do you think that they needed to have done more in the situation?
This is such a funny situation, because you balance the promoter hat and the public needs to know hat. Like, I'm obviously, I need to represent myself as what I am. I'm a reporter. I work for Sherdog. I write the news. In this one particular context, there is some journalism in it, but I am a reporter flat out. But I report the stories. I report the facts as is. So when I put this together, every single piece of this information is cited. You know, I put all the links in the videos, and there were multiple videos, including the first 2 videos I put up were videos that weren't on his, or losses that weren't on his record until we get here. So from that perspective, I think the people should know there's been some shenanigans going on. The UFC has their weekly betting show. It's John Anik, Johnny the Greek, and Nick Kalikas. And Kalikas touched on it. I think he even said the F word too when he was talking about the weirdness and the headaches it was causing him for fraud, by the way, audience, not the other ones, that it was causing some issues. But that's the only time I heard any UFC type of person. I think it was Alan Juban on the preview or one of the shows said that it was swirling with controversy. But you could see a concerted effort from the UFC to be like, okay, let's not talk about it, because it is an egg on your face thing, because then it would, you know, just in theory, it exposes the UFC that they're not checking into these fighters, and you can take the ramifications and implications from there, that it makes the UFC look bad, and at the expense of what? you know, the wouldn't make the broadcast better if the UFC said, if Paul Felder was talking about Mozgov, and once he, you know, takes that right hand and Menefield goes into that double, and then Paul Felder rips into him for being a total tomato can or something, it doesn't help the product. I mean, it's they were caught between a rock and a hard place, and I understand the choice they made, even if I disagree with it, but that's because we're media, you know, we want to know, and we want people to know. But it's what really the only thing we'll know how seriously the UFC takes it is if we're watching the UFC roster watch automated Twitter account, and it will say that Askar Mozgov has been released, because otherwise, I mean, if we, can you imagine if we like saw him fight again?
Oh my gosh!
In your time doing this, obviously you've been doing this for a while. Have you ever seen anything like this? Especially, obviously, I know the kind of the regional circuit might see this kind of thing occasionally, but especially at the UFC Bellator level, have you seen anything even close to this before? I've been watching the UFC for a long time. I don't remember a story about a guy's record being, you know, cooked heading into fight week. So have you run into this, anything like this before?
At this level, not to this degree. Like there have been examples. Here's a positive example. Here's a good one. And I'll see if I can remember his name right off the top of my head. He's a Russian fighter, Damir Ismagulov. He's a lightweight, and he was 20-3 or something like that. Very, very talented, long win streak. And we received on Sherdog about a year and a half ago a request for, hey, this UFC fighter is not complete. There's a tournament he participated in it, and son of a gun, it was right. Here's the full tournament. It was called Alash Pride, which is a major Kazakhstan organization that they run over there. And oh my gosh, that's Damir Ismagulov running the train on three, you know, obviously unskilled relative to him competitors. There's three real wins that nobody had on his record. So now he's better. So that's a real situation that is a positive thing. And we're grateful. Oh my gosh, I'm so happy to get this. But to have six false wins that never happened. Like, this is the kind of thing. This isn't whoopsies or whatever. This is that the event didn't exist. Like, there was one or two that were registered under some organization called Hmong Championship. Now, sports fans out there, there's no such thing as Hmong Championship in MMA. There's no such thing. MMC over in China could be Mars Martial Championship. MMC is the similar logo, but that's not enough to tell us that this kind of thing happens. So a record of a net change of 11 is just absolutely unheard of, and it's wild. Like, you can think of examples of fighters who have kind of fudged the notes a little bit, and you know, we know that some fighters have taken the easy road. No disrespect whatsoever to Tyler Santos, 19-1, but an Astrofight team at the beginning of her record, she fought several competitors who were, you know, 0-6 or something along those lines. But at least she had those fights.
Yeah.
At least she fought these people and competed against them. But for an absolute work of fiction at the UFC level to get by everybody, and it got by everybody, and you know, all of us included, until fight week, is just one of a kind. And it's such a strange situation where there's just make-believe happening. The very first poster I put up on the article that I have of FF Files is a picture of an event called GFC in Turkey. Well, here's the thing. This event never actually happened. And the only proof we have of its existence is the fight poster of him versus some guy. And it's just imagination. So no, this is special. This is really special.
And you made it very clear in your article, once again, everyone should go check it out. Not a good idea for fighters to do this. Certainly not recommend doing this. Probably a career killer. We're probably not going to see him again, would be my guess.
Not.
Because we have seen the UFC release guys for a lot. Not as bad reasons as this. And yeah, I mean, it's like we've all said, he didn't even look good in this fight. He looked terrible. So.
Yep. Sorry to interrupt, but I feel a little bad talking about him on Jab Cross Hook. He didn't even land that many significant strikes. He only landed two in the whole fight.
Yeah, I mean, he was basically on the ground for the entire time. I mean, Menefield took him down and just started bounding him out. I mean, that was just too easy.
Yeah.
He landed the jab and the cross, but maybe not a hook.
So. Yeah.
Today's episode officially just called Jab Cross. Well, that's awesome, Jay. We appreciate you coming on. Sure. Like I said, this was a fascinating story. I thought it should have blown up even bigger in the sports world because it's not something I've ever seen before. So thank you for coming on. Once again, everyone for who's watching, go check out the article because you dive pretty deep into it. So
I think we're putting it in the notes in the YouTube. So if you're on there, there should be a link in the notes. If not, that's a note to our producers to do that now.
Thank you guys for having me. I enjoyed this. This is a special story, and I enjoyed telling it to y'all. So take care, guys.
Thank you so much. Guys. See you soon.
Fascinating.
That's crazy, man. That's crazy. Yeah,
when we did the show on Wednesday, it was like just getting going. Like it was almost like the smoke was kind of building. And I think, Amy, we even asked you about it, and you're like, yeah, like it's kind of weird. Like no one really knows what's up with this guy. Like kind of
strange. Yeah, you know, it's funny because when I saw his article – or I saw them talking about it. I saw the name and I was like, who? I've never heard of that guy. I'm like, whatever. I don't need to deal with this right now. And then I was at Media Day and they were talking about it at Media Day. They're like, oh yeah, blah, blah, blah. And then I'm like, wait, he's coming to Media Day? He's a UFC fighter and he's coming to meet, like, because if you come to Media Day, that means you're on the main card. So I was like, this is crazy. Not only did I not realize he was a UFC fighter, but that he's on the main card. So it was just, even that day, we were all kind of like, what's going on? Like, you know, we just didn't know. It's definitely something none of us have ever had to deal with.
No, that was a bizarre story. I think he definitely gets cut, right? Like, I'm surprised
he has to be. He has to be.
Yeah, 100%. He was a joke out there. It was, like, ridiculous.
One more note on this. I don't know how you feel about this, Reed, being a better as well, but this might go down as one of my biggest regrets. I bet on Minifield, but I should have
asked
friends and family to lend me money so I can bet on this guy because he was, like – mine, like, it closed, I think, -250. Like, yeah, big favorite, but still, like, you could make some money.
Yeah.
I just felt like this was too good to be true because you know this, like, sometimes in betting, things that seem like they're too good to be true usually are. This is one of the rare cases that you could have just made literally as much money as you could gather up to bet you could have made on this because it was just that easy and just that good. This guy was a bum.
Yeah,
but the crazy thing is that, like, because there's so much unknown, what if he had been really good? What if some of those wins had been real? And, like, maybe, who knows? Like, maybe there was something, it's another country. I don't know. So it's like, that's what kept me from doing a big bet.
Yeah.
Right. And that was, to be honest, the responsible thing to do because you're right. I mean, we couldn't know for sure, but in hindsight, it's like, damn, I could have made so much money.
Yeah. Like, I always go, like, bet regret, like, you know, like, oh, I didn't bet this person, I didn't do that. Like, I didn't put enough on this person. Like, bet regrets, I only put, like, a normal bet. Like, you know, I didn't take him in the draft because I didn't know. And then when it kind of came out that this guy is a clown and everything, you know, I bet Menifield money line. And then, like, I took inside the distance. And then, like, I sprinkled on some props. And I was, like, by the end of it, I was, like, in pretty good. And then, like, he wins in whatever it was, like, 2.5 minutes. I was, like, God, I should have, like, gotten like real creative and gotten more involved in this because I mean that was too easy. I had him to win by submission like +600. That was like kind of the big like enchilada there, and he had him in the crucifix and I was like, oh, like maybe he'll just like tap out because like he doesn't want to like be in the fight anymore because I heard that he tapped that other time
right
like an elbow, so I was like, oh, maybe he'll just like tap and I'll win. And then like whoever was the ref just stepped in was like, you need to stop, like literally killing this person. Like, this guy's not supposed to be out here. But yeah, bizarre story.
Yeah, a couple more quick topics before we jump into the draft here. The other thing that we need to talk about last weekend's card is Alexander Volkov wins by first round TKO. Questionable stoppage. At least, I mean, I think it was questionable, but also it's so hard to argue with stoppages because, like, at the same time, we're playing with someone, like, you'd much rather an early stoppage than a late stoppage because we're playing with someone's, you know, health. Their head health, their brain health. Do you two have any thoughts on this? Amy, I'll start with you.
Well, I didn't see it, but I do have to say that there are conversations that sometimes happen. I'm not saying that this happened at all, but there are times where fighters will talk to the ref before they go out and say, you know, don't, whatever you do, don't stop it. Let me go, you know. Or sometimes I think there might be fighters that say, if I look in danger, stop it. I don't want to be... you know, don't let me go. Don't let me be beat up for too long or whatever it is. So I'm not saying that's what happened, but I think that there are times when the referees kind of make that judgment call about the, I mean, we see it all the time with women. They stop them earlier than they stop the men. So I don't know if maybe there was something going on with maybe his opponent. I don't know, but I didn't see it. I don't know if it was early, but yeah, I agree that I tend to be more upset about late stoppages than early stoppages.
Yeah, I thought it was pretty. I thought it was a fair stoppage. I mean, also,
I've certainly seen worse stoppages.
Yeah, it was a little early because like Rosenstreich wasn't like down. It wasn't like he like hit the deck and like, you know, he was like getting like kind of clobbered. But I don't know. He was talking to Herb Dean after the fight. Like, it seemed like he was kind of there. But like, also, we're talking heavyweights. This isn't like a flyweight bout where like the punches, like these, like Volkov is like the biggest guy on the roster. He's 6'7". So like, you know, the beating can only get so bad. I thought it was fine. Like, I thought if it didn't end right then and there, it was going to end in the next 10 to 15 seconds. So maybe it's a little early, but like Volkov, look, I think Rosenstreich's mouthpiece came out too, which like to me that I was like, oh, that they're going to call this. That was kind of like the warning sign. And then like 5 seconds later, they did. A little early, but like, I think the fight was about to end. So I don't see anything wrong with it. You know, like if it was like a fight still in question or like it wasn't like a clean knockout or anything, then like I'd be like, ah, like kind of let it go a little bit. But like this one, he was up against the cage and Volkov was kind of teeing off on him and his mouthpiece came out. Like, fair stoppage, I thought. A little early.
We still have a lot to get through. So let's just jump forward right to, well, I think Darren, what I didn't even see this. What's it? Darren Till has a Khamzat tattoo.
Khamzat. No, it's actually somebody has two tattoos. One is of Khamzat Chimaev. The other is of Darren Till. That's actually weird. Pretty epic tattoos, but we have a visual if we want to throw it up there real quick. They are amazingly done tattoos. But also like, why?
Also, very weird. Why are you doing that?
The only thing I would ever do of that size and magnitude would be like a Brooklyn Nets NBA championship tattoo, like on my like leg or something. That would be it. Like, this is like a wild. Also, like, yeah, Darren Till tattoo. Like, come on, what are we doing? Darren Till of all people.
Yeah, tattoos of other people in my mind. Unless it's like a family member, obviously that's a little different. But just like tattoos of like athletes, like actual like athlete faces is always weird to me. Like, there's you always see pictures of like people like a Joe Rogan face tattooed on their arm. It's like, that seems kind of strange to me.
Right?
I have a Pee Wee Herman tattoo, just for full disclosure. It's that's just a little one, though.
It's like a character, though.
Yeah. I mean, he's a real person.
Yeah,
but like what's the story behind that?
You just like Pee Wee Herman? Actually, when my son was young, he asked if he could pick a tattoo for me, and I said, sure. Cool. And he picked Pee Wee Herman, because at the time, all we watched was Pee Wee's Big Adventure. And so I have a little heart and like a little cartoon. And it's funny because I was at a jiu-jitsu tournament one time and it's on my shoulder, on my back. And the owner of the promotion saw it and just completely flipped out. And he's like, anytime you come to any of them, tell them you're the girl with the Pee Wee Herman tattoo and you can always get it.
That's amazing. That's, I mean, yeah, that has an actual story behind it. I doubt this guy has a heartwarming story about
this. That person who got the Darren Till tattoo had his child pick. Hey, which UFC fighter do you want to get on my leg? I'll do it.
At least they're done well. That's all I got to say. Like, they're done
very well. Very well done. Good artwork.
Last thing I want to talk about before we get in the draft here, Amy, I believe your story came out today with Glover Teixeira.
It's actually coming out as soon as this is over, so this is a sneak peek.
Ooh. I've known him forever, and I've heard his name a million times. It's just one of those names I can never – Teixeira?
Teixeira, yeah.
Okay, and it's Glover.
It's tricky.
Glover, too. Yeah.
Okay. I struggle to spell it every
single once again. Time. I've known him his entire UFC career. I've been aware of him. I've listened to his name a million times. I always get it wrong. It's one of those names for me. So tell us a little bit about that. I think you have some pictures to go along as well, possibly.
Yeah, we've got some pictures we can throw up while I'm talking. I'd say about a month ago, went to Connecticut. I think I did a show from there and was in the gym with him. I got to follow him for about 2 days. Did some photos of him training with his coach and with the other kids. And I think my story is really centered on the fact that he's very humble. He's not like a lot of the UFC champions. He allows just kind of anybody access to him. He continues coaching and he has this really neat philosophy about how, you know, he wants to keep teaching everybody his secrets, all his favorite submissions and the way to defend those favorite submissions, because that's the only way that he's going to get better is if he teaches people to beat him. So the only way that he will improve is to then figure out a way to trick them. So it's like his really, it's a really cool philosophy of getting better. A lot of, UFC fighters will close down their gyms when they're training. They don't want anybody there, even people within their gym. He's there teaching classes while he's training. He's got a class that he teaches warming up and doing rounds around him while his coach is there with him. You can see in the background, there's, you know, people training while he's training. It's just really, it's a really cool experience, and it's not common with UFC champions.
That is a fascinating philosophy that you don't hear very often, where he gives up because then he figures if I give my secrets up, people will figure out counters to it, and then it'll only make me better.
Right.
That's exactly it. I don't even ever heard that from people before. That's fascinating.
Yeah, when he told me that, I was just like, wow, that's such a cool way to think. You know, it's a very confident way to think as well.
So that article you said is coming out right after we're done the show?
Yep, I'm going to hit publish right when this is over so you can look on Fansided and find it there, and I'll tweet it as well. There'll be more pictures, quotes from him, quotes from his coach, stuff like that.
Awesome. I'm looking forward to reading that quite a bit. Speaking of Glover, you two ready to get?
Let's do it.
Yes.
Champ, you got the – speaking of champ – Champ, you got the order.
Yep. Defending champion. So if you are new to the program, if you haven't watched this before, we do a little bet draft to make it a little bit more different when talking about who we like this weekend. It is a snake draft. We go obviously 1-2-3 and then 3-2-1. We draft fighters who are fighting in this weekend's card. And then based on the odds, whoever finishes with the best record and is up the most units or occasionally is down the fewest units at the end of the card wins that week's draft. Because I won last week, I get to pick the order. Quick question, and we didn't discuss this before we went live. We have in the past done four rounds for the pay-per-view cards. Are we only doing three? Because it is a little bit of a shorter, like smaller card.
I would say three. We're running a little bit late as well.
And you're correct. We're a little bit behind schedule. And the card, even though it is a pay-per-view, it's a little bit of a small, like there's not as many fights as a normal pay-per-view. So let's stick to three rounds here. I haven't even thought about what order I want to go in, to be honest. I will go, I'll go third. Reed, you go first. Amy, go second.
Okay.
Putting me on. Are we just picking from the whole card too, since we're not doing the four rounds, or are we doing?
Yeah, we'll just do the card. Anything's available.
Okay. Let me get my pick together and send it to the producer. I'll do everyone a solid this time around. But
so obviously Glover.
I feel like the reigning champ though usually picks. They want to go third. I feel like that's. I did it last time also. I feel like that's a trend.
Yeah,
has been a little bit of a trend, hasn't it?
Yeah. So I got my pick in. I'm going main card though. First pick. I'm gonna say the name for sure wrong, but Ramazan Emiv.
I should have gone first overall.
Damn it. Slight underdog, and he is like the perfect underdog bet in my opinion in what you're looking for. Veteran, has a lot of age and experience on his opponent Jack Della Maddalena. Maddalena came from the Contender Series, then gets like a just trash can type fighter, like minus 400 favorite, knocks him out. Great. Emiv is a wrestle heavy, has the experience, like I said. He's going to try and take this to the mat, slow down Maddalena. I think that's a huge step up in competition. And I mean, look, if Maddalena is that legit, then I'll lose on that. But again, at like plus money like this, I think that Emiv, you know, slight on maybe like a pick 'em, maybe a slight favorite. I just see like plenty of avenues to victory. So I'm happy to get him first overall. That was my top pick on the board.
Yeah.
Plus for that pronunciation as well.
I was right?
Or I don't know, but that's how I would have said it.
Looks right. Listen, I agree with every point you made. I should have gone first overall. I didn't think either of you two were going to take him. I thought he was going to drop to me at number three. But if you're going to give me a Dagestani fighter at plus money, I mean, I'm just going to take it, just almost based on that alone. So.
Especially an inexperienced fighter like Maddalena. Like, you know, you got to prove it to me before you're going to be laying that type of price against a vet. So,
but also, to be fair, that does kind of concern me because I don't really understand why. Why Maddalena is a favorite. So maybe the odds make us know a little bit something else, but hey, maybe it's just that easy. So yeah. I obviously like the pick. I would have taken if I went first overall. So that is the first fighter off the board, Ramazan Emiv. Amy, you're up next. Let's hear your pick.
I mean, I think it's pretty obvious. I'm going to pick Glover first. And not just because I spent a couple days with him, but because I like the underdog And I can't believe that he's an underdog. I mean, I get it. I get, like, Yuri is one of those guys who's just scary, scary, scary. But I don't know. Like, I there's something in Glover that, you know, we talked about his philosophy. I just feel like if he wants it, if he wants to be a reigning champion, he will be the reigning champion. You know, in the interview, we talked a little bit about, you know, retirement and does he want to make history and those types of things. And he's sort of just, I feel like he's really happy with his career the way it is. So I'm just curious to see what Glover shows up, but I'm always going to put my money on him. He shocked us before. I think he can do it again if he wants to. I think people are underestimating him, so I'll take him. Me and my underdogs.
I did kind of assume you were going to take him, so I was comfortable picking behind you. I was hoping, I did not think Reed was going to take Ameev, and I thought Ameev was going to fall to me, so my strategy half worked.
I guess we should talk about the fight, though. I mean, I'm in a bit of a pickle because, like, I think Prashaka is, like, the real deal. I'm a big fan of his. Like, since he, I know he's only fought twice, but, like, I've been on him both times. He's fought, this guy's a monster. Like, he's legit. I'm not, like, but I don't know. Part of me thinks, like, it's pretty binary, right? Like, Prashaka's either going to knock him out, like, just knock him out silly, or Glover's going to, like, hang around for, like, the first round and then get it to the mat really quickly and make him submit. I'm kind of leaning towards taking Glover, probably by submission. But, like, I'm not confident in that pick.
I mean, I think, too, like, Yuri has this weird way of training where he's got – I would love to follow him and see what his
training is. He's, like, a wild, wild person.
Yeah, which is not always a good thing. Like, it's good. Like, it was good for Tony Ferguson for a while, and then it stopped working because your unpredictability almost becomes predictable. Does that make sense? Like, he got to the point where he was doing crazy things and focusing on, like, being different and not doing the normal thing, when, like, the normal thing works too. You know, it's like, so you don't want to get so far offline that you kind of jump the shark, I guess is what you call it. But I don't know. Like, I think that could only last so long for him before he has to bring it back to basics.
This is like the ultimate test of kind of like a, you know, an unorthodox guy against, like, Glover, in my mind, is like the best example of a guy who just does the, like, the basic, not basics, but he does, like, everything right. He's not going to be an unorthodox, he's not coming out throwing spinning back fists and things like that. He's going to do all the simple things very, very, very well, and that's how he wins fights.
Yeah, like, if we're talking about, like, next week, like, Yuri knocks out Glover in the first 90 seconds and, like, is the champ, like, yeah, but, like, look, I know he has a lot of fights under his belt and stuff, but it's a bit – he's running up the ranks really fast, and it's deserved, but I wouldn't be shocked if he gets humbled a little bit here and loses. Like, again, I think he's a championship-level fighter. I think he's huge, and he's, you know, legit, but – he hasn't really been challenged on the mat before, and he struggled, you know, in, like, his regional stuff on the mat. So I think, you know, when you're facing an ace like Glover, you know, if Glover's able to hang around the first 2 minutes, I think this fight gets really interesting. And again, if I had to guess, like, I kind of lean towards Glover by submission in, like, round two, round two.
It's not a fight I'm going to be betting on, to be honest. I'm just going to sit back and enjoy because
it's probably Glover a pass. I don't see much value in betting here.
I have to say, I'm actually really excited to be able to sit on my couch and watch these fights and not have to be in the back and, like, squished with somebody and, like, scrambling with the internet and stuff. I'm just so excited. I'm inviting people over. I'm like, we can watch it. We can eat. Awesome. We can do whatever we want. So I'm excited for that.
It's great.
Love it. All right, I'll get to my first pick and the final pick of the first round. We just talked about the main event. I guess, this isn't the co-main event. It's the third fight on the card? Yeah, the co-main to the co-main. Weili Zhang, I'm just going to take her to beat Joanna Jędrzejczyk, -175.
I was going to take her, too.
Yeah.
I didn't think you'd go favorite early.
Obviously a big favorite here, but I think it's the right pick. I mean, Joanna hasn't fought since their last fight. To be fair, their last fight was a razor-thin decision. I even think it was a split decision. She hasn't fought in the past 2 years now, which makes me a little bit concerned. But this just goes back to the same strategy that I've harped on. It feels like almost every single show. I've looked at the data. I did a deep dive research a couple years ago. It is a long-term profitable betting strategy that when rematches happen, you bet on the person who won the first fight. So it's really as easy as that. And I think we've seen the best that Yun Jaecheck has to offer, whereas I think Wei Lei Zhang still has room to grow. So I think they are trending a little bit in the opposite direction. So I will take Wei Lei Zhang -175 as a big favorite.
Yeah, I'm with you here. I like Zhang a lot in this fight. This was like a similar line to when they first fought 2 years ago. And I mean, it was like,
was she that big of a favorite the first time?
Yeah, I think maybe like closer to -160, but like in this range, like moderate to biggish favorite. But like, it's three rounds this time. Like, Zhang kind of let it fly. She's the better striker, in my opinion. And like, it's not like she's like, I know she got knocked out by Rose Namajunas. I thought that was kind of fluky. And then she lost a tight decision. I thought she was winning early, kind of gassed out and got like kind of ended up on the mat too much. This is a three-round fight. Joanna hasn't fought it since this fight. Like, I don't know. Isn't Zhang just like probably going to look better than the first time around, right? Like, I feel like early, like a shorter fight is going to benefit her more than Joanna, who is more of like a cardio type of fighter where she's trying to grind out decisions. Zhang is kind of going for knockouts and trying to like land damage.
Amy, any thoughts on the fight, or maybe you want to keep your opinion until later?
I want to keep my opinion to myself. Okay.
All right. I will say I love Joanna's favorite fighters of all time. How could you not love her as a fighter? But, and I think she represented a very milestone in women's martial arts. But I think now Wei Lei Zhang kind of represents the next level of women's mixed martial arts. But I could be wrong. Maybe she comes out and wins and makes me look stupid. Super possible. But I will take Wei Lei Zhang. So let's bring up the recap graphic for the first round. I'm the only one on a favorite in the first round. Back in favorites has actually kind of won me a couple drafts recently. So, but we'll see how the rest of my draft goes. And then both underdogs for Reed and Amy. Ameev +135 for Reed. And then Glover Teixeira in the main event as an underdog +165 against Yiri. All right, snake draft. That means it is back to me. I'm going to take actually an underdog in this one. And I'm going to take Jake Matthews +120 against Andre Fialo.
This guy's been around lately.
Yeah, this is the third time he's fought since we started the show, which is only like we've been doing this for a few months, and this is the third time he's fought. He's fought a lot. This is his third fight this year. He lost his first fight in the UFC, then went on to score two straight knockout wins, which are obviously very impressive wins, but I think this is a very significant step up in competition for him. Jake Matthews has been around for a while. He's experienced, but he has room to grow, and he's actually, I think he's one of the more underrated fighters in this weight class. And big thing to note about Jake Matthews that I like about him quite a bit in this fight is he's very good defensively. 61% defense rate, only absorbs 2.16 strikes per minute, so I think that should actually obviously help nullify Fialo's knockout power. And also, Jake Matthews is a fantastic wrestler. We know this about him. He averages just under 2 takedowns per 15 minutes in the octagon, and we really haven't seen Fialo fight a very talented and skilled fighter. So I think we're getting a little bit of value on Jake Matthews here. And he also shares the same name as the Atlanta Falcons' best offensive lineman, Jake Matthews. So a little bit of biased love for him just for that reason alone. So Jake Matthews +120.
I like it.
All right.
That's all I got for you.
All right. No disagreements, or maybe Reed disagrees and maybe he's going the opposite side. We'll see. Amy, it is back to you for your second round pick.
Okay, so clearly based off my reaction to your Wei Lee pick, I'm going to go with Joanna Yun Jaecheck. I think normally I would probably go with Wei Lee just because of the experience, you know, the fact that she kept fighting while Joanna was out. But there's something about Joanna that I don't think she would return, and I don't think she would take this fight if she wasn't sure she was ready. There was some talk that she could potentially be retiring, all kinds of stuff. I don't know. I think if she's coming back, she's going to make, you know, put a message through, like, I'm back. I just don't see her losing. I mean, maybe a very close, like, razor split decision. But yeah, I think Joanna's got it. And I have a fun story about Joanna. I'll always remember it. So I always put some money on her. I was doing a fun thing with some fighters at Media Day one day where I had them all reading a section of a Christmas, the night before Christmas, they were each reading a page, and I was putting it together to make like a cute little Christmas video. She was not on the card, but she was there at the hotel and found out I was doing it and wanted to be included and came downstairs just to be included. And she could not pronounce the word chimney. She kept saying chimmery. And I just like, I know it has nothing to do with why I want to bet on her, but I just think about that and it makes me smile. And I cannot put money on anybody against Ioana ever again, because in my head I just hear chimmery over and over.
I feel like I saw that video. How long ago was that?
It was before COVID, so 2 or 3 years. Yeah, I mean, it had Mike Perry in it. So it
yeah, I think I remember. I think I remember watching that video.
Yeah, it was fun. Some of them got really into it, and yeah, I remember to do it. They had to separate Colby and Usman. That was when they were fighting. So I had to have them in different rooms, and both of them took it really serious and like read through the pages a couple of times and practiced. So I don't know. I thought it was really cute how well the fighters and like wanted to do, like they took it so serious. They wanted to be really good on camera. So hopefully we can get back to doing some fun stuff like that soon.
I mean, obviously I'm on the other side. I'm not going to argue too much though. Like I said, I love Ioana as well. I wish her the best, but from a betting perspective, I think Weili is the pick, but we'll see.
Amy, is there a chance she retires if she loses? Or that's like, this is like the start of like the comeback, not, I know you were saying like announcing she's back, but like what if she loses? Or you have no idea?
I don't know. I think
you're relatively young.
Yeah, I mean, I think that maybe the retirement talk was more like fans because she was taking so long. I don't know if she ever did. I think there was one time where she tweeted something that said something that kind of alluded to retirement, and I messaged her manager and was like, hey, is she retired? And her manager said, no, she's just enjoying vacation. And so I don't know how much of that retirement talk was actually her, if it might have been more like the fan saying. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. I don't think if she loses, I guess it would depend on how she loses.
Yeah, for sure.
All right, Reed, go ahead with your final pick of the second round, and then we'll recap the first two rounds.
Yeah, I'll go with another underdog on the main card, Rodrigo Bontorin.
Oh, I had him on mine.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Yeah, so people love Manal Cape. Definitely said that one wrong probably too. I just don't see as much Bontorin. I've seen his last handful of fights. I know he's technically winless in his last four. He had a win overturned to a no contest. But I watched him in Kai Kara France, who's now challenging for the title. He had him done in the first round. Cara France ends up getting up and from a submission, knocks him out. So, like, if that changes, like, I just think this is a really low price for a veteran. He's been around. He has 11 wins by submission, and Cop hasn't been challenged really there. A lot of his wins are by knockout, kind of wild. If Bontorin could hang on, I know he kind of gassed, but I think he can win this fight by submission. I think it's a steep price, and this is a step up in competition, in my opinion. Bontorin's fought the better fighters. I know he's on a losing streak, but I kind of want to play against that and get like kind of the falling knife. So I'll take Bontorin at plus 185. And it seems like Amy agrees with me.
Yeah, just, I mean, that's what I had. That was going to be my next pick. So yeah.
It's a big price. So I don't know. I kind of lean there. I think, you know, submission threat especially.
Yeah.
No arguments for me. All right, let's bring up the round two recap graphic here. All three underdogs this time. So out of these six fighters selected so far, only one has been a favorite. There's no way this will, you know, go south for us. Bontorin plus 185 for Reed. Ioana Jędrzejczyk plus 145 for Amy, and Jake Matthews plus 120 for myself. That brings us to the third and final round of the UFC 275 draft. Reed, go ahead.
Yeah, kind of don't love as much on the card. Zhang was kind of like my third. That was kind of like my ideal draft. Bontorin, Emiev, and Zhang. But I'm going to go Steve Garcia, minus 175. Steep price to pay. Maybe a little overvalued, but guys facing one on Contender Series is a plus 475 underdog. Now all of a sudden, I know he won, so like, yeah, I give him some credit, but like, yeah, put him all the way up. Garcia has two UFC fights and another Contender Series. He's 2-1 in those fights. Plus 4 in reach. He's 7 years older. Has a ton more experience. I just think this is one of those fights where he could get this to the mat and whether win by knockout or just grind out a decision. You know, I don't love anything else on the board really. So I'll just take a guy I think is really likely to win. And hopefully, you know, that, you know, the Bud Light 3-0 right there.
I thought you were going to go Andre Fiallo.
No, I kind of like him too, but I don't know, something fishy about that. Because I think Jake Matthews, you know, you make good points. And I don't know, I don't like Fiallo as a favorite because he's kind of knockout or bust.
All right, so it might be the first time ever myself and Reed will not be on opposite sides.
Maybe that will be the better for us.
Amy is smirking right now. Amy, are you going against Reed?
Yeah.
Here we go.
That was actually the other person I had on my list in case I couldn't get Bontorin. I do not know how to say this dude's name.
Have you spoken to him though? That like is going to make me like feel stupid about this, or you're just taking a shot here?
No, I literally was looking for an under because there's a lot of names on this card I don't recognize or don't. And there's not a lot of good underdogs. You know me, I want the underdog. Mm-hmm. So I looked at all the underdogs. I picked the one that I thought had the funnest name.
Okay.
And he's a debuting fighter as well, so he has that little element of like he's got the I got to make a show statement. Here, you know, yeah, statement. That's the word I'm looking for. I got to make a statement. He's coming in off a bunch of crazy wins. I don't know. It's something about him I liked. I'm still not going to try to pronounce his name.
Hayser Mahishat.
It seems like he just goes by his last name.
That's right. He's the Madonna on the card. That's right.
I also like that I tried to like cap this fight and tried to like make a case, and Amy's like, I just really liked his name.
He's
an underdog. That makes me feel a lot better.
I have no insight whatsoever. I looked at his Tapology. He wasn't even on my radar, but then at the last minute I was like, oh no, we need four picks. So I put him down, and thankfully I did because I ended up getting one of my picks taken away. So, yeah. So there we go. He's going to be the one I get probably.
Probably because I'm on the other side.
Yeah. Well, and I'm going against both of you guys this time. I don't think I've ever done that.
Yes. So me and Reed are not going against each other, but you're going against myself and Reed.
Someone's got to do it.
In two of your three fights. All right, I like it. I am going to go with my final pick, and I did not send this one to the producers. I apologize. It is a prelim fight, though, so I don't think we have a matchup graphic for it. I'm going with – now, I don't know which name comes before the other one because I'm seeing conflicting reports, but either Na Liang or Liang Na.
She just missed the cut for me. I like this pick.
All right, perfect.
I'll get you here. I'm going to bet on her in some capacity.
So my big thing, this was my kind of my backup because Ameev ended up getting selected, but she is a +130 underdog. She is fighting Silvana Gomez Juarez. And if you look at the matchup, at least based on how these fighters have had their fights finished, I think it's a good one for Na Liang. Once again, I apologize if it is the opposite Liang Na, but she has 10 submission wins. And Silvana Gomez Juarez is coming off two straight first round submission losses. Her latest submission loss came to friend of the program, Vanessa Demopoulos. So two straight submission losses against what seems to be a submission artist. Also, Silvana Gomez Juarez is 37 years old, which is getting a little bit up there for mixed martial arts. Na Liang still 25, so a little bit more room to grow with her as well. And she did lose her UFC debut to Ariane Carnelossi.
Mm-hmm.
But before that, I mean, she was on a five-fight win streak, maybe a little bit of octagon jitters her first fight out. So I like her as a little bit of a slight underdog. Maybe she can pull off a submission.
Yeah, Suarez does dumb stuff out there. She, like, just puts herself in difficult situations, so hopefully knock a pounds. I'm going to bet this with you.
Yeah, if Suarez is in a stand-up war, I think she wins, but if she does what she did the last two fights, she's going to be submitted for the third straight fight. The Prosecco is already getting to me here. I'm half drunk over here. All right, so that's our draft. Let's see the entire recap graphic here. Oh boy, Reed going Ameev +135, Bontorin +185. You ended up going with a favorite and your third and final pick with Garcia -175. Amy, all three underdogs sticking true to form here. Glover +165, Ioana +145, and Maheshat +145. And I went Weilei Zhang -175, Jake Matthews +120, and Nia Liang +130. There we go. Can I go back to back? Yes. Will I? Yes. Any final thoughts before we wrap this up, Reed?
I'm pumped for this card. Not as much name brand, but I think it's going to be quick, but Yuri Glover is going to be a sick fight. So I'm pretty pumped for that one. Oh, wait. We didn't even talk about Shevchenko Santos, so we should probably do that now that I'm going through the card. But
Here's all you need to know about this fight. Shevchenko is once again going to win in dominant fashion. The end. That's why we did. Thank you for bringing up the graphic here, team. Because to be fair, these are actually one of the shortest odds I feel like we've seen for Valentina for a little while. Only minus 625, usually just like minus 1100. Is she now the most dominant women fighter with Amanda Nunes having lost her last fight? I think so, right? Yeah.
You know, when something that I forgot to bring up that could affect some of the American, North American, South American fighters is the time difference. They're going to be fighting at 5:30 a.m. local time. So
I was going to ask you what time does it start? I mean, I could just check what Singapore.
It's normal for us. It's normal for us. Like,
what time does the event start in Singapore?
5:30 a.m.
So the main card goes on at like 9 a.m.
Probably around.
That might actually be okay for. Wouldn't that work in the advantage of the North American fighters if they just stayed on the same sleep schedule?
Well, they're not used to fighting at 9 a.m. though. Because some people, you know, they usually have to wake up warm. You know what I mean? It's just a different routine. It doesn't necessarily, it could be an advantage depending on how you feel. But
yeah,
I know that when they fight in the morning here, a lot of them don't really like it.
But to them, if they keep the same sleep schedule, obviously it'll be lighter. Like the vibe will be a little bit different. But if they keep the same sleep schedule, it'd be just like as if it'd be at, you know, 10 p.m., 8 p.m.
But they can't keep the same sleep schedule because they've got weigh-ins and media day. You know what I mean? Like, they're going to have to be on their time while they're there.
I guess it's a fair point.
Yeah. I don't know if it will affect them, but
I unfortunately don't. And, like, I don't want this, like, we come on next week and, like, we're like, oh, we were so wrong. Like, I just think Shevchenko is just a cut above on Santos. Like, I don't see it really anywhere. This is, like, I think the third or fourth time in her last 10 fights that she's been under minus 1,000. So, they're giving Santos a lot of respect. Jay even said Talia Santos, like a lot of her records are kind of bumped up a little bit. She's still talented, but again, I don't know. Shevchenko's just like much, much better.
I mean, and Santos on a 4-fight win streak, but I mean, like she's not fighting anyone even close to Shevchenko's. Like last three fights were Jillian Robertson, Roxanne Modafferi, and Joanne Wood, formerly Calderwood. So, I mean,
no one.
Very good fighters, but they're not. They're not even close to Shevchenko.
Yeah, it's like it's a different beast right there. Yeah. I think so. Like, I don't know, because I would say Shevchenko early knockout, but she's kind of not finished early lately. I know Jennifer Maia went to decision. Lauren Murphy was like a late knockout, so I don't know. Maybe just like stay away from this altogether.
Yeah, I mean, there's.
Definitely don't bet Santos, though. Like, the payoff is just – like, the price isn't justified for the difference between the fighters.
No, like, I don't think so.
Pena over Nunez, that was, like, much more in range. I think that was closer to, like – she was, what, like, 6-7-1? Much bigger on the dog. But yeah.
All right. Yeah, thank you for bringing that up because I fought. But, I mean, like we said, there's not really too much to say about that fight. But, hey, maybe we'll – we've seen crazier things happen before. So, maybe. Amy, any final thoughts? You're excited to watch this at home.
Yeah.
I'm assuming my invite to the watch party is in the mail.
Yes, absolutely.
All right.
It'll take you as long to get here as it will for the whole card. So
yes.
Leave early.
All right. Well, then if that's everything, let's wrap it up here. Thank you everyone for watching. Like and subscribe if you're watching this on YouTube, of course. Thank you all for watching. Best of luck with your picks. We'll talk to you. Is there a card next weekend?
Yes.
Right.
Texas.
Oh, it's in Texas.
But I will be at PFL, so we can talk about some PFL next week.
There we go. So we have lots of MMA to talk about. Next week's main event is Calvin Kattar and Josh Emmett.
Yeah, good card next week, actually.
Fantastic fight there. And then Donald Cerrone and Joe Lozon co-main event, which was supposed to happen a few weeks ago. So looking forward to that. So best luck with all your bets this week. And we will talk to you next week.